Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Last Tuesday, the FBI swept through the Office of Special Counsel, set up to protect government whistleblowers and prevent partisan politicking in the federal workplace. Its head, Scott Block, plucked from President Bush's Task Force for Faith-Based Initiatives, was controversial from his first days in the role when he refused to pursue gay and lesbian discrimination cases. When he came under fire from the Justice Department, he started setting his sights on some big Republican targets, including Karl Rove. Last week, the lid blew off. This hour, On Point: whistleblowers, politics, the Bush administration, and the strange case of Scott Block. Joining me first today from Washington is Ari Shapiro, who reports on the Department of Justice and National Legal Affairs for NPR. He's been following the Scott Block story very closely. Ari Shapiro, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tom.
Lots and lots of angles to get into here, but take us back, if you would, first, Ari, just to last week and these raids on Scott Block's office, on his home, the Geek Squad, wiping his hard drive, the whole thing. What happened last week, Ari?
Well, the funny thing was, as of last week, everybody knew that there was an investigation by the Inspector General at the Office of Personnel Management into Scott Block. That investigation had been going on for more than 2 years, and people had no idea whether it would even finish before the end of the Bush administration. Nobody knew that there was this criminal investigation going on until suddenly the FBI swept into Scott Block's home and offices, as you said. They confiscated computers. They shut down the email system across the country, so field offices in Dallas and San Francisco lost their power to network. People had no idea what was happening. I learned that they even did a physical search of Scott Block himself, and they took two thumb drives or flash drives or key drives. They're also called, you know, portable drives that store digital information off his person.
Little ones, and, like frisking the head of the office and taking little drives from him.
Exactly. And the reason they did that, apparently, is that Scott Block testified to congressional investigators in private that this was just a few months ago. He said that before he hired this company, Geeks on Call, to wipe his computer a couple of years ago, he copied a bunch of files from the computer onto these thumb drives, and he carried them with him on a keychain at all times. Those were the thumb drives they took.
Okay, this just on the face of it is enough to really turn our heads. We want to dig in and figure out what's going on here, but Ari, tell us first about this office. What is the Office of Special Counsel? When was it set up? What's its function? When did Scott Block get involved with it?
Well, yeah, it's one of these strange organizations whose name tells you absolutely nothing about what it does. But essentially, it investigates whistleblower complaints. It's supposed to protect federal government employees from retaliation and also, as you mentioned, investigate allegations of improper politicking on federal government company time or on the company dime. It was set up after Watergate to sort of make sure that there was somebody to protect these government employees. And Scott Block took office about 4 years ago in 2005. As you mentioned, he was very controversial early on because the allegation was that he was doing exactly what he was charged with preventing other people from doing, which is to say retaliating against career employees, engaging in partisan politicking, and so on and so forth.
So the early allegations were that he was seen as described as a Bush loyalist, and what he came in and said, first of all, I'm not going to go after gay and lesbian discrimination cases. And when there was disgruntlement about that and other issues in his office, he kind of sat on his own staff, was the allegation.
That's right. He apparently, the career employees say, he established a field office in Detroit, Michigan, which had not existed before. And he said to a dozen or so employees who he perceived as his enemies, you're either going to take an assignment in Detroit or you're going to have to resign. So I'm forcibly reassigning you. You've got a very short time to make this decision. Are you going to take your families and relocate to Michigan or leave the office? These employees left the office. And eventually, after a lot of pressure from these former employees, from whistleblower groups, from private attorneys, the Office of Personnel Management, which is part of the executive branch, the Inspector General at the Office of Personnel Management started an investigation into Scott Block. As that investigation unfolded, Scott Block hired this company, Geeks on Call, to come and scrub his computers. Now, he said he was just doing that because there was a virus on his computers. But investigators wonder whether he was trying to get rid of incriminating evidence. And it was that incident, the Geeks on Call scrub, that really set off alarm bells as far as obstruction of justice goes. And so the search warrants that FBI agents brought to Scott Block's home and office last week said obstruction of justice on it. Once again, it's this old thing in Washington that it's the cover-up, not the crime. What he may end up going down for, if in fact he's charged with a crime, if in fact he's convicted of a crime, and we should mention he has neither been charged nor tried nor convicted. We're very early in that process. But it looks like they're going after the cover-up, the potential obstruction of justice, rather than the original alleged crime itself, retaliating against government employees and so on and so forth.
And obstruction of justice on exactly what front? Is that known?
Well, there are several different fronts. One is if he hired Geeks on Call to destroy evidence that was part of this Office of Personnel Management Inspector General investigation, that could conceivably be obstruction of justice. But there are other allegations, too. For example, one of the subpoenas was for information relating to a 2004 investigation of Condoleezza Rice. Now, if you remember, in 2004, Condoleezza Rice was the president's national security advisor. She's now Secretary of State. And she made trips, and the allegation was that she used government money and government time to make these campaign trips for President Bush. So this went to Scott Block because his office, as we mentioned, is charged with investigating these sorts of allegations.
Violations of the Hatch Act, which prohibits that kind of federal use of federal resources
federal
for campaigning.
Money. So the investigation went to Scott Block's office, as these investigations typically do. But career employees say that Scott handled the investigation in an unusual way, which is that rather than giving it to the career staff, he took it for himself. He did this investigation, and he found there was no wrongdoing on the part of Condoleezza Rice. And then these career employees say that when they started grumbling about this isn't the way these things are typically done, they say Scott Block went back into the computer system and deleted the evidence that he had assigned this to himself. That, too, if it's true, could be obstruction of justice, hiding the evidence that he had taken this for himself and cleared Condoleezza Rice of wrongdoing. You know, the people who are very suspicious of Scott Block say, did he do this to curry favor with the White House? Well, we don't know because, according to these career employees, there's no longer any evidence there that he did it at all.
Now, all of that looks like potentially defending the Bush administration or defending himself once he came under some scrutiny. But at the same time, Scott Block steered his office to actually go after the Bush administration on several fronts, including going at Karl Rove. He was not just in a defensive position. He was also, well, some people might say doing what he should be doing, you know, keeping track of what's going on inside the federal government.
And the investigation of Karl Rove was, again, a Hatch Act investigation. It was whether Karl Rove had improperly used government money and government time to do federal, you know, politicking, campaign politicking in federal government offices. But one of the interesting things is that last week a document came out. It's this 10 or 15-page document that is the consensus view of a task force in Scott Block's office. And this task force consisted of career employees in his office. The task force oversaw this Karl Rove investigation and other major investigations. And at one point, the task force said, you know, we've been looking into this Karl Rove thing for a very long time, and we haven't found any evidence of wrongdoing. At the same time, in the Justice Department, there are people such as Monica Goodling, who is the former senior counsel to the Attorney General, or Bradley Schlossman, who oversaw voting rights in the Civil Rights Division. The task force said, these are people who have more or less admitted to improper political behavior during federal using government money. We really think we should be investigating them instead. And according to this document that came out last week, Scott Block said there are no resources to do that investigation. And so the people who, you know, are opposed to Scott Block speculate that perhaps he was going after Karl Rove to kind of cover his own behind so that when the Justice Department comes and raids him because he knew he was being investigated, when something happened, he could then come out and say, well, they're just going after me because I'm targeting the administration, because I'm targeting Karl Rove. And so, you know, the career employees who wanted to go after people like Monica Goodling and Brad Schlossman instead of Karl Rove are claiming that rather than Scott Block sort of following the evidence where it led and following the strongest cases with the greatest potential for success, he was covering the cases that had perhaps the highest profile and the biggest, they would say, potential to cover Scott Block's own tail.
It sounds like a mess, but potentially an important mess to understand. Ari Shapiro, stand by for a moment. I want to welcome Into our conversation from New York, Scott Horton. He's a contributor to Harper's Magazine, writes the No Comment blog at harpers.org. Been closely following this case. He's an adjunct professor at Columbia Law School. Scott Horton, thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be with you.
There's a lot of detail here, and we're going to pursue it. But what's the big picture? What's going on here, in your view, with Scott Bloch's troubles and what they tell us about the Bush administration and the way it has handled politics, whistleblowing the works?
Well, you could all sum it up by looking at this as a case of an investigation of a man accused of having destroyed emails who's conducting an investigation of a White House where emails have mysteriously disappeared. It's amazing. Now, it raises this overarching question of who guards the guardians. And I think it can be fairly characterized also as a sort of turf warfare between different investigators. At least from some distance, it has that appearance.
Is this what always happens in the seventh year or eighth year of two terms in any administration? Is there something different going on here, Scott?
Well, I think you're right that the seventh year or the eighth year of any administration usually turns to these sorts of inside inquiries. But I think it's also fair to say that the Bush administration has been marked from the outset by some strange goings on inside the IG function. In fact, Time magazine 2 years ago published an essay in which it looked systematically at the inspectors general who had been appointed within the administration and found some common traits. They tended to be movement conservatives. They tended to have a long track record of highly partisan political engagement and to be qualified ideologues. And in their conduct as inspectors general, they tended not to support whistleblowers, but in fact to go after them and make life different to them for them. And Scott Bloch fit very much into that mold.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Bush special counsel responsible for protecting federal whistleblowers. Now, in the hot seat himself, my guests are Ari Shapiro. He covers Justice Department and National Legal Affairs for NPR. And Scott Horton, a contributor to Harper's Magazine, writes the No Comment blog at harpers.org. Scott Horton, when you saw, two dozen FBI agents, federal agents going into Scott Bloch's, or when you saw the news of them going into Scott Bloch's office and home, what was your first thought? What is your conclusion about what's going on here?
Well, I had been following the tension that had emerged between Scott Bloch's office and Department of Justice since the middle of last year, because it was clear that Bloch, though himself the target of an investigation, was looking very closely at a series of problems inside the Department of Justice. We knew, for instance, he was looking at the U.S. Attorney scandal and the Hatch Act issues that surrounded that. We learned quite recently he had also been looking into the conduct of federal investigators and prosecutors in bringing charges against former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. And we learned with this memorandum that Ari mentioned before that's just come out that he shut that investigation down. He seems to have gone after and blocked investigations on a basis that's not entirely apparent. In fact, I think this memorandum raises some very serious questions about it. But I think pulling back to the day of the raid, the first thing that went through my mind was the level of deployment of resources by the FBI and the Department of Justice on this matter, which was extraordinary. I mean, we had, according to one report, 20 FBI agents being deployed. Now, that's a sign that decisions were taken within the Bureau and the Department of Justice at a very high level.
Ari Shapiro, it was remarkable to see the number of people there, unmarked cars, federal agents swarming over office and home, as you say, even patting down the special counsel here. How do you interpret that? Is this justice saying this office is going awry, or he was also investigating justice? He was poking justice itself. Could this be justice, you know, shutting down an investigation that threatened to air some of its own dirty linen?
Well, without question, it was a huge deployment, particularly given that this was one government office visiting another government offices, and there are all kinds of less high-profile ways to do that sort of thing. I mean, when the Justice Department wants information from a different part of the government, they could just ask for it. At a slightly higher level, they could issue a subpoena for it. They decided to go in metaphorically speaking anyway, guns blazing, unannounced, shut down the entire network, you know, 20-some agents in his office alone and then more in his home. I talked with some former federal prosecutors who have overseen these kinds of investigations, and they said to them, this sends a very clear message that the government was afraid that if they used a lighter touch, these people said the government was afraid that Scott Bloch might destroy potentially more documents than he is already alleged to have destroyed. You know, if you issue a request or a subpoena for documents, that tells people you want this stuff and you're coming to get it. And if they're so inclined to destroy documents, and remember, one of the things that, people allege Scott Bloch has done is destroy emails, that gives them a window in which to do it. So if you go in guns blazing unannounced on a day that starts out looking like any other, they have no chance to, you know, for example, throw away the thumb drive or delete the emails or trash their computer if they were inclined to do that.
Scott Horton, we had agents carting off boxes of documents in unmarked government sedans. Does this sound like shutting down a bad operation in Scott Bloch's office or sound like justice potentially covering its own tail?
Well, it was definitely using a sledgehammer. It definitely crippled the operation of the office as a whole, and it did this at a time when the focus of those operations had been turned against the Department of Justice. In particular, certainly the U.S. Attorney's matter, question of political prosecutions, was figuring near the top of the agenda for this office, and that work has been pushed back. And we know, of course, for many months now, the Department of Justice has been suggesting that Scott Bloch's work on these matters was obstruction. They've been refusing to cooperate. They've been insisting that the matter be handled by their own internal investigation, which is by their Inspector General and their Office of Professional Responsibility. And a lot of people on the outside have really lost confidence, particularly in the Department of Justice's Office of Professional Responsibility, to police itself internally. It's really had an abysmal record over the last 7 years.
Ari, you know, many people will remember that case. Eight U.S. attorneys forced out by the Justice Department, dubious circumstances. David Iglesias in New Mexico, who we've spoken with, and others. Is there a sense that Scott Bloch, one-time Bush loyalist, was legitimately going after some kind of wrongdoing in the Justice Department? Or is his campaign there not given credibility because he had so many problems of his own?
Well, he was going after problems in the Justice Department, and he did have credibility problems of his own. So it's impossible to read his own motivations in this. And it's also true, as Scott Bloch says, that the Justice Department said, hey, look, we're being investigated by Congress, by the Inspector General, by the Office of Professional Responsibility. Why don't you hold on and wait until all of those are done, and then you can have your bite of the apple, which really angered the Office of Special Counsel. The Inspector General at the Justice Department, though, really is an exception from the sort of characterization that Scott gave of other inspectors general throughout the government. The Inspector General at the Justice Department, Glenn Fine, actually started in the Clinton administration and has a really stellar reputation for being nonpartisan and apolitical. And he has been criticized for taking too long in this investigation. But I would actually be surprised when his findings of the U.S. Attorney's investigation come out. I would be very surprised if he was criticized for being too political, too shy, or something along those lines. I should also say that the guy who's handling the Scott Bloch Office of Special Counsel investigation is a really interesting character because his profile does not fit at all the typical federal prosecutor profile, and he doesn't have a political background at all. This guy's name is James Mitzelfeld. He is an assistant U.S. attorney in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, D.C. So he does not work out of the main Justice Department building. He works out of the Federal Prosecutor's Office here in Washington. And in 1994, he won a Pulitzer Prize for the Detroit News for investigating financial abuses in the Michigan State House. And so this is a guy who comes from an investigative reportorial background. He then went to law school. He became a federal prosecutor in Detroit and went on to be a federal prosecutor. He just recently arrived here in Washington. But he's the guy who's running this investigation. It is not a political appointee or even a career attorney with a political background.
So he sounds like, by his background, a straight shooter, but there's been all kinds of shooting in recent years, and who knows what direction the main body of lead is flying here. Let's take a call from Washington, Iowa. Jeffrey, you're on the air. Good to have you. Hi, Jeffrey.
Good day, Tom. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just am amazed that, you know, this is just another example of this administration taking liberties with anything they well please. You know, the secrecy with the energy meetings early on, and the rewriting of the Constitution at their will, and the abuse of the powers of the presidency. This is just another example of this administration just run riot. And where are the restraints or whatever, and the checks and balances? How come they're not taking care of these things? And where's the outcry from the public?
Jeffrey, let us pick it up. Scott Horton, you're the one at Columbia Law School. Is this case opening up a yet bigger window into some general problem here? A caller in Iowa says administration run riot. What do you say?
Well, you know, I think it really does bring a focus on the Hatch Act issue and the question of politicization of various branches of the government, especially the Justice Department. But it also presents a question of internal conflicts effectively within the executive branch, although Office of Special Counsel is a quasi-independent office that was authorized by Congress. I think it's a sort of internal bureaucratic battle that arises as a result of a problem that became pandemic in this administration and that has gone effectively unchallenged either by congressional oversight or by serious investigation and prosecution up to this point. So it's really amazing that these problems have not resulted in serious prosecution up through the end of year 7.
And define that pandemic problem as you describe it. You know, I'm having trouble getting hold of the edges of it here. There's a theme, but what's the concrete definition of that problem you're describing?
Well, if we look at it just in the context of the Justice Department, it is a political direction of prosecutions and investigations. And that undermines a fundamental tenet of our Department of Justice, which from the time of the founders has gone forward on the basis that we investigate crimes, not people. And we're very, very cautious to give the appearance that there is any sort of partisan political edge to an investigation. And the accusation that lays in the background of the U.S. attorney scandal and matters like the Siegelman matter is that prosecutions were brought and pursued for a partisan political reason. And the evidence that's developed now is so substantial that these things just can't be dismissed.
Ari Shapiro, remind us of the details of this Siegelman, the Don Siegelman case in Alabama.
Well, the allegation was that this was essentially a trumped-up charge against the guy that Karl Rove helped bring in order to help Republicans win elections down there. The problem is that now that you've got a trial and a conviction and the person is in jail, this investigation—
This was a former Democratic Alabama governor, yeah. Justice Department brought prosecution on corruption charges in 2006.
Yeah, exactly. And so the problem is the allegation of political involvement in bringing the indictment, Republicans will tell you, does not explain away the trial and conviction that subsequently took place with a jury of his peers, they'll say. Mm-hmm. So, to me, what this whole big picture brings to the fore, really, is the importance of appointments, is that once you get sort of a bad apple in a very powerful job, it becomes extremely, extremely difficult to get rid of that person. Whether you're talking about the Justice Department, the Office of Special Counsel, any other place in the government, it's much, much easier to get a qualified person in there in the first place than it is to replace an unqualified, underqualified, or corrupt person with somebody who will do the job better.
Are you saying Scott Bloch fits into that last sort of despair? Encouraging broad definition, unqualified.
The allegations against him would fit him into that description. As I said, he hasn't been charged with a crime, he hasn't been tried, and certainly hasn't been convicted. But the allegations against him sort of would put him into a category with other politically partisan, underqualified people who we have seen come and go.
Scott Horton, was Scott Bloch the right kind of person to be, the main whistleblower sounding board in the federal government in the first place?
Well, I think certainly not. I mean, you really want someone like Edward Leavy, who, when he was appointed Attorney General by Gerry Ford, you want someone who stands above the partisan fray, is not involved in partisan politics in any way, and has a solid prosecutorial background. And I think he had none of these qualifications. I also think this January memorandum by his own staff really raises very substantial questions about the way he exercises his professional judgment. He seems to be shutting down investigations for no good reason when the investigation would appear to embarrass someone with whom he is closely aligned. That's a terrible appearance.
Let's go to John in Plymouth, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
Thank you, my call. With regard to our conversation today, what I'm about to say really applies to many of the conversations that you've had with guests, and that is that ego versus honor is always a losing proposition. It's honor is the stuff that real men are made of, and women. And my point is that whether it be from a Valerie Plame perspective or from a weapons of mass deception perspective or from executives in the Army and military leaving the fold, it seems that this is the kind of cost we cannot pay back.
But, John, is it ego or is it partisan politics playing out here?
My feeling is that it's ego, and that ego is something that really is, it comes from experience and it comes from the school of hard knocks, which I do not have the confidence in the people at work have this type of sort of honor that they would actually, you know, live to, you know, clear if that were the case.
Yeah, John, let us pick that up. Ari Shapiro, Shapiro, how about it? Honor. We're up into a high concept, but a central concept to government
yeah.
here.
I mean, you know, to me, one of the really sad things about this whole story is the allegation that stacks and stacks of complaints from really good people who were apparently dismissed from their jobs for bad reasons, that those complaints were just sort of dismissed. I mean, you know, people who worked in the Office of Special Counsel for years and years and years and who, according to public reports and people I've talked with, did an incredible job and kept the office running, they left because they weren't able to work with the guy who was running the office because they say the guy who was running the office retaliated against them. And so when you talk about the issue of honor, you know, these sort of bureaucrats, which we use as a disparaging term, but they're the people who keep the machine running. These bureaucrats who have been doing yeoman's work for years and years and years are no longer in those jobs. And in many cases, those are the really honorable, hardworking people.
Scott Horton, a different kind of pattern when whistleblower complaints were deep-sixed in this office than we might have seen in years earlier?
Well, I think so. You know, this office doesn't have a very long or significant history, but I think we saw a definite downturn over the course of the last 3 years in the office. But I want to go back to the concept of honor. I think that really is, your caller's right. Mm-hmm. That sits right at the core of this issue, and you ought to go back and read that famous letter that George Washington sent to the first Attorney General Randolph in 1789. In which he set out the standard for appointments to high federal officers, particularly in the Justice Department. And he said it really turned upon honor and also perception of alignment. He wanted people who were not partisan in any way, who were not members of his family, with respect to whom there was no obvious public perception of a connection or improper alignment. That's at a very, very high standard, and we've come a long way from it today.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Bush special counsel responsible for protecting federal whistleblowers. Now in the hot seat himself, Scott J. Block, federal agent, swarmed over his home and office last week, frisked him down personally, took away a couple of tiny computer drives from the man who's supposed to be protecting whistleblowers right across the federal government. We've been joined by Scott Horton, a contributor to Harper's Magazine, adjunct professor at Columbia Law School, Ari Shapiro, NPR's Ari Shapiro, whose reports you've heard on this, filling it out the picture for us today. I want to welcome to our conversation right now from Washington, Avi Cuman. He's a partner at Katz, Marshall & Banks. They are representing former and current employees of Scott Block's Office of Special Counsel and watchdog groups who filed the 06 complaint that led to the Justice Department's inquiry into Scott Bloch. Ivy Cumin, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, first on the tight focus, what was the substance of the complaint that you helped file here?
Well, the allegation in the complaint is that Mr. Bloch retaliated against many employees in his own agency for speaking out about what they perceived to be illegal conduct by Mr. Bloch. So it's ironic that the top whistleblower enforcer for the federal government is alleged to have retaliated against his own employees. As Ari said, these people that he believed were speaking out against him were given the choice of transferring to an office halfway across the country on as little as 10 days' notice or losing their jobs. And of course, when they refused to transfer, all these people were terminated.
And the misconduct that they perceived, can you give us a sense of it? Was it, you know, fine-tooth stuff? Was it nitpicking or was it significant? Did it go to the heart of this office's job?
Certainly the latter. One of the allegations is that Mr. Bloch, as soon as he came into office, dismissed up to 1,000 whistleblower complaints without giving them any adequate investigation at all. Another complaint was that Mr. Bloch, for political reasons, had refused to investigate cases of discrimination against gay and lesbian employees in the federal workforce. That was a protection that they had had for going back 20, 30 years. It's protection that even the Bush administration supported. But as soon as he came into office, it appears that he removed all information about that office's coverage of that situation from the website, from their complaint materials. And when the employees spoke out about that and said this is illegal, essentially, we believe that they were retaliated against.
The dismissal of maybe 1,000 whistleblower cases, how was that justified? We've got too many in the hopper, too big a backlog, can't handle them, or it's a new day, you know, there's a new sheriff in town, we're not going to be bothered about whistleblowers in our government.
Well, I think that perhaps why Mr. Bloch ordered that done is to create the appearance that he was moving quickly through a backlog of cases. But what should have been done is those cases given a proper investigation and decide the cases on their merits, not simply dismissing hundreds and hundreds of cases before these people had any really real investigation and any chance of protection against retaliation for them losing their jobs potentially.
Ari Shapiro, Scott Bloch came out of the Task Force for Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, had been at Justice with that task force. And then, of course, as Avi Cuman says, he communicated that they weren't going to go after issues of discrimination against gay and lesbian employees. Does that look like it was a faith-based decision on his part or something else?
You know, it's hard to say, but I can certainly say that based on the career employees I've talked with, that initial decision, they say, really kind of poisoned the atmosphere. It made people afraid to speak out. It made people feel like they couldn't. These people have told me firsthand, do their jobs the way that they thought they were, you know, assigned to do their jobs. And then after the threat to send people to Detroit came and people, you know, a dozen or so resigned, people said there was really kind of a paranoia. Everyone was afraid they were going to be next. They say this was just a work environment that they could no longer function in. And these people tell me it has just sort of been like that for the last couple of years. And so, you know, last week was really kind of the first major break, the first major change in that. Although, you know, one thing we haven't mentioned is that as far as I understand, as of now, Monday morning, business is more or less continuing as usual in the Office of Special Counsel. Scott doesn't intend to resign. Neither he nor his lawyer have made any statement. You know, a grand jury is taking testimony from people who were subpoenaed last week. I think they start hearing testimony tomorrow. But that'll all be private. And for, you know, all public intents and purposes, the Office of Special Counsel is going forward with business as usual.
So the grand jury goes ahead, but the wheels keep turning here. Ed is calling from South Boston. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I just wanted to comment. First of all, I always love your show. But the Dan Shore the other day was saying that the Bush administration is all about the old spoils system and has been handing out these jobs left and right this way, and that's the way they play the game. And as far as honor is concerned, the honor in from their point of view is that anybody who the ends justify the means. They have ends in mind that don't correspond to the political system that we have, at least the one I think we have. And the honor for any of these people that are in place in these positions are to toe the party line.
Ed, let us pick it up. Avi Cumin, a spoil system here or something more particular, more focused, more political than simple spoils?
Well, the charge that Mr. Block has repeatedly raised, as already mentioned earlier in the hour, is that this is a politically motivated investigation by the Bush White House. And I've got to agree with Ari that I don't think that that's what's happening here at all. The complaint against Mr. Block was filed in 2005, and the Inspector General's office has been investigating him since then. There's still no outcome to the investigation. And so from our perspective, the investigation has been very slow, very incremental. Mr. Block should have been sanctioned a long time ago. And since that time, it seems like Mr. Block has picked up certain investigations as a way to insulate himself and create just the appearance of conflict where really there was none. So, for example, getting into the U.S. Attorney's investigation, the Office of Special Counsel doesn't have any jurisdiction into that area.
Yet he has pushed at that.
That's exactly right, and we believe that that's basically to create an appearance of conflict so that the Bush administration would have more difficulty removing him. In fact, in April 2007, we wrote to Fred Fielding, the White House counsel, asking him to require Mr. Block to recuse himself from that investigation, assign it to somebody else, so that there wouldn't be that appearance of conflict. And now Mr. Block is using that to suggest that this is politically motivated, when in fact it reverses the chronology entirely. The investigation against him has been going on for much longer than his investigations at the White House. But what I think is really getting lost in this discussion of is this investigation, is this FBI raid fair to Mr. Block, is what's fair to whistleblowers. You know, whistleblowers are nothing more than federal employees who put their jobs on the line, conscientious people, to report misconduct and violation of the law by federal officials. And in that way, they serve a very important public function. And, you know, what has been going on for years now with Mr. Block in office at the Office of Special Counsel is that whistleblowers have just not been protected at all. You know, hundreds of complaints being dismissed wholesale. The entire whistleblower community has been against Mr. Block for a number of years now. And whistleblowers, federal employees, the American taxpayers deserve an Office of Special Counsel that's actually going to do its job, is going to protect whistleblowers. And this office has not been doing that for a number of years.
Scott Horton, how do you see it? Whistleblowers being hung out to dry here, kind of abandoned in their complaints, or there's another view which sees this as a kind of tong warfare within the Bush administration. You know, one office versus another, Office of Special Counsel versus Justice, and almost a revenge or brushback in that big raids last week.
Well, I'd say I come out agreeing with roughly 90% of what Ari Cumin just said. In fact, I think the internal memorandum that we just saw has it just about right here. That is, the Office of Special Counsel clearly had the right to come in and deal with Hatch Act violations, which are a big part of the internal issue relating to the U.S. attorneys, the questions surrounding Monica Goodling and her vetting of people and hiring practices, Kyle Sampson's involvement as well.
Certainly along that political lines, which would be the violation of the Hatch Act.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So certainly that line of inquiry would have been appropriate. But it's also clear that Scott Block was going for the political headline grabbers. He was going for what had been above the fold in the newspapers dealing with the U.S. attorneys rather than the lower profile stuff that really was his proper turf. And I think that doesn't look right. And I think his own employees and their internal memorandum said, look, we've got a request from the Department of Justice asking us to pull back while there's a potentially criminal investigation going on. And I think under the traffic regulations that govern clashes between investigations, that would have been the right response. And he didn't take it. So that also suggests something wrong in the way he's guiding this department.
Let's go to Kevin in Truro, Massachusetts. Kevin, you're on the air.
Three quick points. First of all, the office itself should be made a nonpartisan position as much as possible, perhaps even a professional civil union position itself. The second thing is that when he was improperly repressing or suppressing all these investigations, the Bush's proper response should have been to terminate him and then let the new replacement investigate him as well as reopening the other the other whistleblower cases.
So just clear him out. What do you think about, swarming into his office and house? And
well, that's my point. It was improper for them. Their response to his impropriety was itself improper. They should have terminated him like they would with any other employee not doing their job. And then they should have replaced him with somebody else and then just prosecuted him more properly, done an investigation that way, as opposed to get one agency raiding another.
Kevin, thanks for your call. Ari Shapiro, how about it? When we read about federal agents in unmarked cars carting off boxes from the Office of Special Counsel, when that office was in part investigating, for whatever motivation, the Justice Department, you wonder where those boxes of stuff end up and who, do they get? I mean, they're taking away what could be evidence against them.
It could be. In fact, Block, I think, is investigating, this sort of wide range of things, but centering on the main Justice Department down on Constitution Avenue. Mm. This investigation is coming out of the U.S. Attorney's Office, which, of course, answers to the Justice Department, but, has its own separate building and its own separate staff.
Yep.
That's not to say that the Justice Department cannot have any influence on this. Certainly, if they wanted to, they could. But the caller also raised the issue of why didn't the president just fire Scott Block a long time ago? And that's an interesting question. The position is appointed for 5 years, and during those 5 years, the president cannot arbitrarily replace the special counsel, but he can replace a special counsel if there has been serious wrongdoing. And so one question has been, when in the president's mind do you reach that threshold of serious wrongdoing? Block hasn't been accused of a crime or convicted of a crime, but certainly there have been serious allegations against him. And so particularly after last week's raid, a lot of people have been asking, well, is the White House going to do anything? What does the president think of this? And so far the answer from the White House has been a strict no comment.
Let's get a call from Nashville, Tennessee, and John. John, you're on the air. Hello, John, are you there? It sounds like John's on his other phone. Let's get one from New Britain, Connecticut. And Mark. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I feel need to take one step back from this. The most disturbing thing that I've heard about this whole story is actually something that I haven't heard, which is the sense of public outrage. I think the collective yawn that this has generated in the public is a disturbing sign of outrage fatigue in the public reaction. I think we're just so used to mean-spiritedness and corrupt politics from this administration that we're inured to it at this point. And going forward, that's my biggest worry, that the damage done to the body politic and to the public's belief in the system may be beyond repair at this point.
Let's hope not. Let's presume not and work on it. Avi Cumin, what do you say to our caller's observation?
I completely agree. This is something that has not only been a problem with the Office of Special Counsel, but numerous other federal agencies at this point. And I think he's right that we would be generating a much more dramatic response to this in the public mind if this was the first time. But, this is de rigueur for this administration.
Scott Horton, has the bar been moved in a substantive way that's going to take a deliberate, sort of high-profile counter effort by future administrations in the last, in the Bush years here?
Well, I think, I think the caller's right here that people should be more concerned about this. And I think, frankly, we ought to lump this together with the issues surrounding the Justice Department itself. They all go to the integrity of the administration of justice, the criminal justice process, and our law enforcement process. That used to be something that Americans had a very high level of confidence in. That's eroding. And it seems to be dangerously politicized, which is something that we've guarded against quite effectively up until recent years, I think. And this is going to be a major challenge for the new president coming in after January 20th, 2009. That is how to break with the bad habits that were established in this administration.
Ari Shapiro, do you see what standards need to be reset here? And if so, how might that happen?
Well, it's funny because I was just thinking that in 2000 we saw then Governor Bush running on a platform of Restore Integrity to the White House, mm-hmm. meaning one thing, you know, referring to Monica Goodling, the sex scandal. Monica Lewinsky. It's very possible that in 2008 we'll see the Democratic nominee running on the same platform but meaning something different about restoring integrity. I think we're starting to see a roadmap in the Justice Department in which the top officials were cleared out after the U.S. attorney scandal. Somebody was brought in without a strong political background. Attorney General Michael Mukasey had a very good reputation as a judge and is, you know, slowly starting to inch the Justice Department back in the public's mind to its original position of integrity and respectability. You know, it's going to take time, and it'll take time for all of these offices to come back to where they once were. But, you know, time can do a lot just by putting somebody qualified in the position and letting them and time do its work.
Avi Cuman, how about the Office of Special Counselor Protecting Whistleblowers? A new administration, maybe a new head, will that be enough to set it back on course in your view?
I certainly think that having a new special counsel and somebody that is qualified to do the job from the outset and doesn't have a political mindset doing the job is exactly what's needed, but perhaps more is needed. There's a bill in Congress right now which would reform the Whistleblower Protection Act, and that would, among other things, get whistleblower cases into federal court. I certainly think that this shows that we need a backup mechanism to ensure that review is done fairly, impartially in the federal courts and get it out of the hands of inefficient and politically motivated federal officials.
And maybe that's coming. Avi Cuman at Katz, Marshall & Banks, thanks for joining us. And Scott Horton at Harper's Magazine. Ari Shapiro with NPR. Great to have you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.